Peruvian food is really hot right now in big cities across the United States. But when people talk about Peruvian cuisine, there are a lot of different things they might mean.
Like in the different cities of Peru, like all there is a lot of different food, like the variety, like from seafood to fish. Chicken, beef. It's not all spicy, like it's different.
That's Susana Puente. She's translating for her mom, Norma Palomino Torres. Norma moved to Kansas City in 2003, and back then, she couldn't find Peruvian food anywhere in town. But she loved to cook, so she opened up her own place, Antojitos del Perú, to serve up those familiar foods from home. Things like
ceviche, la jalea de mariscos, el arroz con mariscos, el sudado de mariscos.
Norma and Susana show us how they make one of the most popular dishes they serve, lomo saltado. It's a traditional stir-fry made with beef, onions, tomatoes, French fries, and rice. That's right, French fries and rice. It's a comfort food.
You have to warm up the pan with oil. Then put the beef and the stir.
Norma keeps on stirring even while she puts the fries in the cooker.
So she adds salt, sugar, ¿qué más? Oh, and the onions and some soy sauce, tomato.
She piles dark brown strips of meat and wedges of hot red tomato onto a bed of fries with rice on the side. Peruvian comfort food in a Lenexa strip mall. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're talking about South American cuisine because in the years since Norma came to Kansas City when she couldn't find a single Peruvian restaurant, we've started to see a little more variety here in town. Let's stick with Peruvian food for now. I'm joined in the studio by Pio de Tomas, a passionate home cook from Lima. Hi, Pio.
Hi, Ginny.
Your history is really fascinating to me. You're originally from Lima, but I hear you were the captain of a ship on the Amazon River?
I was. I used to work for the scientific group, Missouri University Scientific Group, and we worked for almost three years in road, traveling in all the Amazon rivers, mostly seeing, knowing our Arina community in the jungle. It was a very deep study.
How did you eat on that ship?
We cook in a ship. We have our own kitchen. We have all the commodities. Only thing we have, the ship is not like a big place to be running. And, you know, you have everything in there. But we cook mostly the jungle food, which is completely different about the coast food or Andean food.
So what is jungle food?
It's a lot of vegetables from the jungle, a lot of river fish, wild animals. We cook crocodiles. We cook, we eat monkey. Sorry about that. We eat deers. So we have different animals, you know. We are a very big country with so many microclimates. We have seven climes. So in each step, in each place you go, you have something different. So you mix all the stuff, even in the jungle, in the mountain, in the coast, and you're going to have amazing stuff.
So you talked about jungle food, and that's what you ate when you were in a ship on the Amazon River. But talk to me more, though, about you mentioned food from the Andes, for example.
For the food from the Andes, you have a lot of potato, a lot of spices from the Andes, different animals, different meats. You have a llama, you have it's a big rabbit we call vizcacha. It's a big rabbit. And then we have goat, you know, we have lamb, we have different animals in a high mountain, which we have completely different animals, you know, in the jungle. And the jungle food is, I have to say, the basic jungle food is very simple, very, very tasty. It's mostly plantain or yuca boil with fish or with meat. Each of them, they have his own taste. It's just boil, you know. It's
yeah.
The casual, regular food, the food you eat every single day. You step somewhere, you cook for 20 minutes, and you keep going.
You grew up in a restaurant in Peru. Your mom ran a restaurant.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
My mom used to have a restaurant which was open 24/7 since the day the restaurant start to the day the restaurant end. We have to close some problems. We cook a lot of food. We have people from all over the place come, mostly people who want to do some kind of delivery, you know, make some extra.
Do you remember, is there a dish you remember watching your mom prepare in that restaurant that just mesmerized you?
All of them.
All of them?
All of them. We have 5 cooks, each cook 2 helpers. So I was one of them. I was kind of, since child, I was kind of the tasting guy. You know?
That's a good job.
Yeah. I was the guy who say, okay, this is good and this is not. We need a little more salt or a little more pepper or that kind of stuff, yeah.
You've said that one of the most important things about eating Peruvian food is to eat it fresh, like the second it's done cooking.
Yeah, yeah. The Peruvian cuisine, the main characteristics, I want to say that way, we have everything fresh. Meat, poultry, fish, seafood. Everything, veggies, we have everything fresh. It's nothing you're going to have frozen or nothing you're going to have pre-cook, you know. It's absolutely, you go to the market, you get your fresh stuff and cook. And even the market, if this is not fresh, they just put away.
And is it true that the spice isn't something that's typically cooked into Peruvian food, but instead each, like, dinner guest would add spices to his or her taste?
No, not really, because we have almost 30-something varieties of peppers. Not all of them, they are spicy. I have to say 10 of them, they are spicy. And many of them, they give you a different flavors. And, you know, you blend, you mix those flavors. If this is dry, the pepper is dry or the pepper fresh, you are going to mix those, blend those flavors, which bring you, you know, the amazing, colorful, tasty, smelly presentation in the food that you want to just jump in. That's it.
Tell me about the dish we just heard being prepared, lomo saltado.
Lomo saltado, I have to say, is a very basic stirring preparation. It's mostly, basically, meat. Can be beef, can be chicken, can be even seafood or fish, pork. In a hot pan, stir, and you add onions, you add tomato, little cilantro on top, or parsley, you know, little on top. And then you have seasonings, kind of pepper. You put little pepper, kind of little original Peruvian seasonings, which give you the flavor. And when you have that dish and you play this, you eat something kind of crunchy, something fresh, really tasty. It's
yum.
Yum.
Let's talk about some other iconic Peruvian foods.
I have to tell you, ceviche. Ceviche. Basically, the Peruvian cuisine is, I have to say, is easy. The Peruvian cuisine is fresh. And you have times in order to, you know, get the blend, get the right blend. The ceviche is basically a fish salad. Is it? You know, you got some fish, you got some shrimp, you got some seafood, whatever you want to mix, ceviche mix. Mix ceviche, or you just want to do fish ceviche. Chop some onions, You know, you have the fish, fresh, chop some onions. You blend lemon juice with a couple of other seasonings with the fish. On top of that, you add onions, and voila, you have your ceviche. You give a company with sweet tomatoes, corn, or potatoes. But this is your dish already. If you jump in, it's really, really good.
You won a barbecue contest, I understand.
I do.
Yeah. It was sponsored by the BBC. You were the winner for the Kansas and Missouri region?
Yes. Kansas.
Okay. So the dish that won it for you is called Pachamama. Explain it.
Actually, it's Pachamanca.
Pachamanca.
Yeah. It's a very traditional food. Come from my ancestors. When we have, we pick our harvest. You know, when we do the harvest, the first veggies to come out are the ones who's going to bless, give thank you to the ground, to Mama Pacha. So we cook that, but we cook underground.
How do you do that? How do you cook it underground?
First, we heat it up stones. We put a cover in the hole, you know, with leaves. We put the stones in the bottom. We throw inside meat, some vegetables like corn, potatoes, favas, and a couple of other things we harvest. And then a couple of more stones in the middle, heat up stones. And then we cover with leaves, with some blankets, and we leave there for 2 or 3 hours. When you open that, God is there.
Man, well, I mean... Coming from this particular barbecue tradition, what do you think of Kansas City barbecue?
Well, you know, everywhere you have something different. Kansas City have his own cuisine. You know, I love it, Kansas City barbecue. But when we introduced the Peruvian Pachamanca, was some mind-blowing, you know, completely different taste, flavors. And we have some secret ingredient, which is a herb. It's a kind of wild herb we call...
Wait, are you telling us the secret ingredient now?
Well, yeah, because you're not going to find everywhere. Its name is huacatay. It's the secret ingredient we use to mix and to season the meats. Even if you find, you try, it's going to be delicious. I can tell you this.
So where do you go to get Peruvian food in Kansas City if you're not other than your own kitchen?
If you're going to get the Peruvian food in Kansas City, you have two known places. One is in Overland Park, and the other one is in Johnson County. The one in Johnson County is kind of a mix between Colombian, Venezuela, Mexican, and Peru. The one in Overland Park is a full Peruvian cuisine.
What are the names of these places?
I think it's Antojitos Norma, one of them. And the other one, I don't remember exactly, the name. It's just very next to the Shawnee Townhouse. Next to that building, you're going to see the Latino Corner, Casa Latina. I think it's Casa Latina.
So what about other South American food here in town? Is there another cuisine other than Peruvian that you really enjoy and that you think someone here does it right?
I try different dishes, different cuisines, but... Because our taste is so specific, so special. I'm sorry, we are picky.
No, that's a good quality. I think that's a good quality in an eater.
We are picky because we have the best food in the world. Five years.
Well, Pio de Tomas, thank you so much for talking to us about Peruvian cuisine.
You're welcome.
I'm Gina Kaufman. When KCUR Central Standard returns, we want to know where you go. Are there good spots for Venezuelan, Chilean, Brazilian food? How about Argentinian fare? Help us find the best South American food in Kansas City at 816-235-2888. right after this break. We are back with the Food Critics. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are searching for the best South American food in Kansas City restaurants. Call 816-235-2888 with the dish you love and where you get it, whether it's Venezuelan, Argentinian, Bolivian, Colombian, 816-235-2888, or if you are from South America and wish someone would open a place with the stuff you miss from home, tell us about that too. You never know who might be listening. Jenny, start us off. What's the scene like for South American food in Kansas City and how's it changing?
You know, I don't know that it has been changing that much. I mean, Peruvian food would certainly be a nice addition to what we have. We do have a handful of places, probably over the last maybe 5 years, that have really come on. Some of them are a little older. But I don't know that the scene has changed that much. I mean, it's not like, oh my gosh, this is a new trend and we're seeing an awful lot of these open up. But there is obviously South American influences happening on menus all over town. I mean, you don't have to just be a South American restaurant to enjoy, obviously, and have these kind of dishes on your menu.
So most people in Kansas City probably have some familiarity with Mexican food, which is obviously not South American, but that might be the closest frame of reference some of our listeners have. Can you talk about, you know, how what we are talking about today differs?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting. I mean, Mexico has its own cuisine. I mean, inherently, since the dawn of time, it's one of the six cradles of civilization, if you will. So when they were colonized by the Spaniards, they already had a fantastic kind of culinary history to their food. So what you have in Mexico is kind of an interesting mashup of this indigenous food made with mostly corn and beans. I mean, that was a big part of their staples, mixed with a little bit of Spanish influence. And it created a much richer culture in their cuisine.
You might say that it's quite a bit of Spanish influence.
Right. But South American was kind of untapped and uncharted. So when the colonizers hit the ground running there, I mean, it was pretty much they used indigenous ingredients to make their own cuisine, their own. So it's much more European style. I think South American has a more European influence, I think. But they're awfully close. And especially in America, it gets peanut buttered. I mean, it's a very watered down version of all of it that unfortunately we see an awful lot of. So it is hard to tell.
So talk to me about empanadas and arepas. You can get both at Empanada Madness.
Right. I love these guys. So they just opened a second location out south. Their original location is on Southwest Boulevard. And, you know, their claim to fame is that Salvi, our famous Royals pitcher, loves to go there.
Just looked positively giddy when you said
that. I know. Well, he's such a doll. You know, we all cheer for him, right? But he had famous pictures of him taken in there. So he eats there quite a bit and he likes it. But what's interesting is it's Venezuelan style empanadas. So they're not really necessarily crispy. They're a little softer and chewier, which is just delicious. And of course, filled with any number of things. Arepas too are beautiful, stuffed there with beans and meat.
Explain what they are for those who don't know.
It's kind of like a fry bread. If I were to describe it, I would say it's kind of like a dough that has been fried and then kind of cut open pita style and then stuffed. A little like a sandwich. I mean, when you eat it, it's like a sandwich, but stuffed with beans and meat and various things. They also have some fantastic sauces to squirt on. You know, who knows what they really are? It's green, it's orange, it's red, but it all tastes good. So kind of squirt that all over your sandwiches. But yeah, Empanada Mattis does a great, great job. It's a fun, casual little place, cheap and cheerful. Yeah, delicious. They also do some more kind of heartier entrees as well.
So Mary, well, in fact, all of you have recommended El Portón, but Mary, start us off describing El Portón, where it is, what they do.
It's in, about 103rd and
Null?
Row.
Row, sorry.
Anyway, it's in that area of town. And it's a quick little spot. You can sit down and order. And I love their pork hash. They do roasted pork really well, really tender, flavorful. It's sauteed with peppers and onions and yucca, which is like a potato with chorizo. They serve it with plantains and rice and beans. And it's just a really hearty, simple, lovely dish.
It's fancy. I mean, compared to this owner's other restaurants. And they serve liquor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What nationality of cuisine do they serve at El Portón?
Venezuelan, Cuban. I'm trying to think. Puerto Rican, Guatemalan.
Yeah.
Okay. And Charles, what do you like to get there?
Oh, I like everything there. I think Jose Garcia, who's the owner, is a great classic restaurateur, and he knows what local Kansans, because it is in Kansas, seem to like, and so it's nothing too exotic. It's a real, actually, kind of a meat and potato restaurant.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it is, actually. A lot of it is kind of meat and potatoes when you get right down to it.
Although they have a great Cuban sandwich, too.
What I like about this place is it is sit down. It's a little nicer. I mean, we get an awful lot of South American street food. So I like the fact that this place is a little dressed up, a little bit nicer. But
it's by a lot of standards, it's kind of a fancy place.
Yeah.
Not expensive.
Yeah. But... And you can eat various cuisines. This is such a rich regional coastal. I mean, you have everything in South America that you could even want. So the fact that they try to kind of cherry pick out some places and give those dishes, I think, is great. So,
and Mary, tell us about El Pulgarcito.
So that's in Merriam. I love their pupusas. So if you think about a corn tortilla, and it's much thicker than that, and it's filled. So you can have it filled with meat, beans, cheese. And my favorite part is they've got this huge jar of curtito, and it's a pickled slaw with cabbage and onions and carrots, and there's a big thing of tongs, and you can just load it up.
That is the best part.
It is.
That's
and
the best part.
It's great. It really adds flavor to the dish itself, but I love the fact that it's do-it-yourself and you're not limited.
Mm-hmm. Vinegary and spicy. Yeah. It's
very good for you, like kimchi.
Yes, exactly, like kimchi. And honestly, I mean, the pupusas themselves aren't hugely flavorful. I mean, they're rich because they have meat and cheese and beans.
Oh, I would say they're a cross between a corn cake and a coaster.
They're really fun to make at home. I actually made them at home once. They're really fun to make at home. But yeah, I'd love.
You got to have that slaw.
Got to have the slaw.
So, Charles, tell us about piropos.
Piropos,
excuse me.
It's, you know, a classic, speaking of meat and potatoes, it's a classic Argentinian steakhouse. And very different, I should say, from the Brazilian steakhouses that have kind of popped up all over the place. It's a fancy restaurant. It's in...
Briarcliff.
Right. And although, didn't Piropos used to be in Parkville? Forgive me. I'm confusing myself here. Lots of steak, American beef, but prepared in the Argentinian manner and with spices and
chimichurri.
Chimichurri. Mm-hmm. It's a great steakhouse. Mm-hmm. If you want a different kind of steak,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, and let's talk about Brazilian food, Charles. You mentioned Brazilian steakhouses, and Jenny, you have, you know, a personal connection to Brazilian food, and I'm wondering what stands out to you in Kansas City for Brazilian food.
Well, you know, the Brazilian churrascaria or steakhouse is just, you know, fundamentally, I think, what most people understand Brazilian cuisine to be, but it's so much more rich and varied than that. Taste of Brazil is a good place in the City Market if you want more kind of what I'll call beach snacks, kind of sandwiches and coxinhas, little beach snacks that you would have on the beach with guaraná, which is there.
Brigadeiros?
Yeah, brigadeiros would be a dessert, absolutely, and that would be there as well. They also have a few items that you can buy, like snack food items or even things to prepare Brazilian dishes. So it's kind of a shop. They do have their liquor license, too, so if you're looking for a caipirinha, Taste of Brazil can do it as well. But my favorite
steak... And that is... Tell us about the caipirinha.
Oh, well, so that's the national drink of Brazil, and it's made with cachaça, which is basically a kind of a sugarcane rum. Lack of a better word, yes. And it's just basically poured over ice, and there's sugar and lime that's muddled together, and stir it all up, and it's really refreshing, quite delicious.
Kind of like a mojito.
Yeah, I went directly from a Brazilian restaurant in 1988 into rehab, so that'll tell you how potent it was.
Yeah, it is delicious. But the one steakhouse that I really want to give a shout out to is Porto do Sol out south. I think they're locally owned. It's the wife is the chef, and he's the front of the house, and it's such a lovely, wonderful. I mean, if you really want that full experience, and if you don't want the full meat, you can just get their harvest bar, is what they call it, kind of the salad bar and the hot bar by itself, and you don't even have to go there with meat. But of course, you want the meat.
Can we then put another shout out for M. Shamas north of the river?
Oh, sure.
They were the
originals.
Brothers are great.
They are.
Tell me
absolutely
about that place.
Sam Silvio and his brother Nick, I believe, opened it. And it's really the first Brazilian steakhouse we've
they
had
were.
With the pasadores serving the different cuts of meat, grilled meat. And I think you should never go to a Brazilian steakhouse, especially Am Chamas, unless you have fasted for at least 2 weeks.
To fully appreciate it, to fully eat across the menu.
You get a disc, a stop-go type of thing, red or green, and as long as you've got the green out, they'll keep bringing you meats, and if you put the red out, they'll slow down and stop. But it's basically an all-you-can-eat kind of thing.
Well, let's talk to Benjamin calling us at 816-235-2888 from Overland Park. Benjamin, hello.
Hey.
What do you want to ask or share with us today?
Well, I don't know much, but I do know that Honduran food's one of my favorites, and it's become a favorite since I got engaged to my fiance, and I visited Honduras twice. Now, I think the most interesting food that I've had to eat there is mondongo.
Okay, tell us about it.
Well, mondongo is particularly interesting because, well, and most people don't like to eat it. It's usually prepared in a soup. It's the inner lining of a cow's stomach, but it adds flavor. Usually it's vegetables. They might add a meat in there, but I'm not really sure. I had it once in Honduras, and they do offer it down here at what did you say the restaurant was called down off of 7th Street Parkway? The Honduran restaurant there?
I personally don't know, but...
Okay, anyway, there's a restaurant. My buddy Kevin, I went to school with him here at Johnson County Community College, but it's off 7th Street Traffic Way north after you get off I-35. But yeah, mondongo's, it's one of those foods that you have to have a stomach to eat it, no pun intended.
Well, Benjamin, I'm getting a note that the restaurant in question is Delicias de Honduras. And of course, Honduras is in Central America. We'll have to someday perhaps do a Central American food show. But I appreciate that recommendation. And Jenny, you have kind of snuck a Spanish place onto your list.
I know. It was hard. I mean, I had a hard time not drifting into Central America myself. And I had to literally sit with the countries in front of me. But yeah, so I want to give a shout out to El Tenedor, which is a food truck here in town that does just amazing. I mean, Chef Carmen and Chef Maria run that truck and do lots of private catering. But it's if you want to talk about the cradle of what has influenced Central American cuisine, it was the Spanish colonizers that came. So you have to kind of start with the heart and soul of it, I think. But they do a paella, which is delicious, and you'll find them around town.
Well, if we missed a South American restaurant that you think deserves a shout-out, you can still tweet us about it. We are at KCURCST, and we do include listener recommendations on our handy best-of lists, so please chime in. We'll have our guide to South American food in Kansas City online at kcur.org later today. Up next on our Friday food show, all the buzzworthy restaurant news. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and the food critics are here to do their seasonal roundup of the biggest restaurant news. Openings, closing, menu changes, all of that kind of stuff. Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's start with openings, because it has gotten to where you almost can't keep up with all the excitement around new places to eat in Kansas City, don't you think?
I do. This year has been just incredible in terms of like new places popping up. It's really hard to keep track of it. Lot going on.
So like Black Dirt is one of the most awaited restaurants in Kansas City. People had been waiting for that place to open for what, 3 years?
Feels like it.
Yeah, it was close to that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So that's in the South Plaza. That Jonathan Justice, who has Justice Drugstore in Smithville, he has temporarily closed Justice Drugstore and has got all his servers working at Black Dirt. It's a more casual concept. And it's got a separate dinner and bar menu. He's very local, seasonal. If you want to just get a burger and fries at the bar, but you can have a large platter duck. He's got scallops. He's got Kansas City shrimp. And I think it's very popular right now.
I like the fact that he's doing the dishes for two, like the duck for two mm-hmm. and the beautiful sea bass for two. I think that's kind of cool. You know, get that and a couple of sides and you're good, or a salad. Delicious. So we're thrilled that he's closer.
Is there a particular dish anyone's tried that you'd care to review?
Well, I'm anxious to try the French fries. I understand it's a three-day process, and I'm going to have them on Sunday night, I think.
You know, I've had the pasta dish there. He's got a pasta dish on the menu that's just an easy, easy, lovely. The bar burger is what I'm headed for there next. Yeah. He just launched that bar menu, so I can't wait to get my hands on the bar burger. I have had the fried chicken there, which was delicious. I mean, it's really hard to go wrong. He's really done a very nice job with the food, working really hard to make sure that it's appetizing and comforting and, yeah, delicious. Yeah.
I love the octopus.
Oh, yeah, the octopus. I completely forgot. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, okay, that's Black Dirt in the South Plaza. Let's talk about other plaza restaurants. There are a couple of new ones with a lot of buzz. Hogshead KC.
Yes, I was there last night. Talk to Chef. Hogshead is one of those places. So the chef was from the Capital Grills, name's Clark. And he and his partner, Sean, who have owns a series of bars out south. They've come together to open up this place. And Hogshead refers to the barrel, basically, that was used to transport liquor on like old pirate ships kind of back in the day. So it's not necessarily a pork-centric restaurant, although you certainly find stuff on the menu. I'm insane for the Branzino. I had it when they did the soft opening, which is fantastic.
What is Branzino?
Branzino's a fish. It's a beautiful fish. And he does it kind of Asian style with some lovely kind of Asian fried rice underneath. It's got a little bok choy. It's got some shishito peppers. Really delicious. There's like a peanut sauce, some sort of Asian kind of sauce on it, which is just excellent. But you can't really talk about this place and not talk about his delicious burger, which he really is kind of known for doing. It's more like a brunch burger with a fried egg, really thick pork belly. In fact, I think Mary talked about it on the burger show.
Yes,
so
I did.
We've covered the burger there, but I love it.
That's okay. Cover it again,
well,
Mary.
Well, it is a mouthful. Mm-hmm. And when you cut it and the fried egg just kind of oozes all over, and it's not your typical bacon, as Jenny said, it's a thick pork belly. What I love about the place is it's got a huge chef's counter. So instead of a big bar, Clark was saying it's more Chicago style, where it's all about the kitchen, and it's a beautiful copper bar, and you can sit up there. And my husband loves it because...
And so you look into the kitchen.
You're part of the kitchen.
You are
really
in the kitchen.
You're in the kitchen. Yep.
You are in the kitchen.
And they've got a great list of craft beers, and they're always bringing out different ones. And
what's the atmosphere like?
It's very groovy.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a live wall, which is just greenery that's literally growing on kind of one whole wall. But it's dark.
Nice lighting.
Yeah, dark, but nice lighting, kind of woods and metals. A little urban. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable.
Big open space to the,
the copper
all
chef's
windows.
Counter, though, is where you want. Yeah. I mean, if you're going in there, see if you can get to the chef's counter.
It does not look like... Houlihan's, which was the original restaurant there.
That's right. That's right.
So that's Hogshead KC. And what about Rye on the Plaza?
Rye is a beautiful space. They took down the various layers of floor, so they've got some of the Carthage marble back, and they really tried to make it feel like vintage Kansas City with the subway tiles. It's a very similar menu to the one out in Leawood.
So let's jump in here. I mean, for the listener who has not heard of Rye before, what's the concept?
It's fried chicken, a little barbecue, hamburgers.
It's American comfort food.
Yeah, American comfort food is exactly right. They're open for breakfast as well, which the one in Leawood is not, and they've got a great breakfast counter.
Another great counter to talk about.
And you could have biscuits and gravy, pancakes, whatever. But breakfast, lunch, dinner, brunch, beautiful private dining space.
But for people, so if you're saying, though, like comfort food, this isn't, though, the, go there every night.
Oh, you could. I mean, it's not like Blue Stem, which is their other more upscale restaurant. You could go to have, sit at the bar and have a burger. And the next day you could go have a big plate of fried chicken.
All right. So anyone else want to chime in about a dish they've had at Rye on the Plaza?
Well, you can't talk about rye and not mention Megan's beautiful desserts, which they have a dessert counter in this location. So you can pick up whole pies to go. I mean, literally, like a bakery, you see them in the case and you can take
just
them
like
home.
Tippins.
Right. Yeah. Pies or cakes. I mean, either one. And I think that's just such a great idea. She really is known for her desserts. So don't skip dessert here.
And it sounds like their brunch is very popular, too.
I think it is. And it's
absolutely
Saturday and Sunday. So,
well, comfort food with an egg on it. How could that be bad? How could that be bad at all?
Burn end hash.
That's right. That's right.
So that's Rye on the Plaza. And then another much awaited restaurant, at least for people who live in or around Brookside, is the Brookside Barrio.
Right. That place just opened up. So that was the old Selena Tio's Julian is what that used to be. And
I think most people think of it as Joe D's.
Well, and yes, to go back even further, Joe D's. I mean, it's had such a rich, rich history. And it was an old filling station, basically, and then Joe D's before, obviously. But now it's got a beautiful kind of outdoor patio that's been covered. The whole place has been completely remodeled. Really lovely. Garage doors have been installed so you can kind of throw them up and let the outside in. So the space seems bigger now somehow. There's a bar, obviously, outside on the patio as well as inside. So I think when the weather's nice, that place is just going to kill. But it's Mexican food, obviously, given the name. So, and more of a, he calls it kind of Cali-Mex is kind of what he refers to. But it's more fresh, you know, more grilled meats type of stuff. Not a lot of kind of rich, strangely, but lots of salads and just
fish
fresh
tacos,
ingredients. Yeah, fish tacos,
queso,
that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on within the geography of the city to a very specific block or stretch of street, I guess I should say, Delaware Street in the River Market area.
Yeah, Delaware is exploding right now, and it's really due to Craig Slauson, who basically came and bought 10 historic buildings right along Delaware, which, of course, is also on the streetcar line. And what his vision is obviously to bring hotels and apartments and all of that. But in addition, he wants on the ground a lot of retail and restaurants. So there's a lot of new restaurants that are snapping up these newly available spaces. There's Freestyle Poke, which is opening up. It's going to be kind of a Polynesian bowl concept where you kind of build your own bowls, and they have poke is traditionally made with raw fish, although he's going to have chicken and tofu. I mean, various other things that you can add, and you kind of build your own bowl with sauces and vegetables, which I think will be delicious. People will love that place. And then Tribe Street Kitchen is the name of it, and it's actually opening up kind of right there on the streetcar line. In fact, the patio, you'll be able to see it when you get off on the streetcar stop on Delaware. And it's kind of a globally inspired night market theme, so the menu goes all across the board. And this is a bunch of guys that got together basically and decided, you know, we're tired of just kind of traditional American fried bar food. Like, we've traveled the world, we've had exotic, wonderful things at night markets and various, you know, street vendors all in all of our travels across the world. We want to bring that to Kansas City. So you'll find an Indian item next to a Vietnamese, next to a Thai, next to a Lunda. I mean, on and on and on.
International House of Trouble.
The menu is killer. If they execute, they're going to be really popular.
The menu is super exciting. Yeah. So, and a great bar with exotic international drinks as well.
And there's been some controversy around that change that's coming to that block with Cafe Al Dente, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cafe Al Dente closed, and I think they've got a couple people, I think, interested in that space, although they haven't really announced who's going in there.
It's a great space.
It is.
Although I was never a big fan of Cafe Al Dente, ever.
And if you go a little further down the block from Tribe, there's going to be a fabulous new bookstore, cafe, and coffee bar called Our Daily Nada. And so it's going to be kind of an interesting mix of retail and food. And the food's being done by Chef Carlos, who owns The Bite in the River Market. And it's going to be kind of French-inspired, so you can get a really great cup of coffee, you can get a cocktail, and then just kind of bar snacks, lighter lunches, that kind of stuff, while you shop for your books.
Wow.
I know.
All right. The Russell. Who wants to tell me about The Russell?
It's a gorgeous space.
One of the most Instagrammable spaces right now in Kansas City, for sure. Yeah, it's all over the place. It's just a gorgeous concept. It's two partners, basically, and they're open pretty much kind of late breakfast and lunch only. Their main business is catering. But the space is beautiful, and they just do a lot of lovely kind of salads. Brunch would be a good time to go. They do that on Saturday to kind of get...
Explain where the name came from.
So it used to be in the Russell Florist building, right? So Russell Florist was...
Oh, so we're talking Midtown.
Yes, right off Main.
Right next to Gates.
Yeah, right next to Gates. That's a good landmark. So everybody should get in and check it out. It's really, really a cool new space.
So that's the Russell in Midtown. And what about Myers Hotel Bar? It sounds like this is kind of a legendary place.
Have you ever been, Mary?
I have not.
All right, you have to.
But Anne keeps telling me I gotta go.
You do.
Is it in Tonganoxie?
It is in Tongi. And so this is in an old hotel. And the, Kate Frick is the owner, and she opened up kind of a little cocktail bar. She's a wonderful cocktail bartender. She was in Lawrence for a while and just kind of went out in the middle of nowhere and did this. And she was serving amazing craft cocktails. And then there was kind of a tussle with the ownership of the property, and she lost her lease, basically. And so she closed at the kind of toward the end of last year. And with much negotiation, she and the owner are now on the same page, and she has reopened, basically done a whole bunch of kind of reconstruction work to bring this place back to life. So she is back open and serving craft cocktails in Tongi. So yay, Kate, go right now if you haven't to the Myers Hotel Bar.
Now you talk about her like she's this kind of like important figure. What makes her stand out? Why should, I mean, I understand that people in Tonganoxie should definitely go, but for a lot of our listenership, this is going to constitute a day trip.
You know, it's one of those things where it's every person, it's like humanity around the bar. I mean, really, truly. And so she, what's interesting is that she's doing big city craft quality cocktails that are absolutely fantastic. She's a terrific bartender, and she's doing it in this little teeny tiny town that if you drove through, you'd blink and miss. So that's what makes her unusual. The place itself is very unique. This old hotel that she has rehabbed and refurnished.
Is she serving food then?
I think she plans to. I don't know that she's necessarily serving a menu now, but I know she's doing some coffee in the mornings and that kind of stuff. And I think the plan is eventually to have even a few of the rooms open that you can rent. So this is going to be kind of a complete labor of love for her. I love what she does out there, and I love the fact that she's there doing it. And that's why I think, I mean, Tongi loves her and supports her, but everybody needs to definitely check her out.
So what about County Road Ice House?
So County Road Ice House opened last week, and it's a collaboration of Joe's Kansas City and the Back Napkin Group, who owns Rock Hill Grill. So Back Napkin is kind of in charge of the restaurant aspect of it, and Joe's Kansas City is doing all the smoked meats. And you can get the same ribs and meat platters that you would at Joe's, and they have the same french fries, but they're also using those meats in different ways. So you could get the pulled pork only as carnitas in a taco, or burn-in tacos. They have loaded french fries, same Joe's Kansas City french fries with queso and all sorts of other things on it. It's a really cool space. It's in the Power and Light where Gordon Biersch used to be, and they've redone it. And like, I'm sure during the Big 12 tournament, they're going to be slammed.
This weekend, they're going to be packed.
Yeah, they're doing a limited menu, packed. I understand. But it's, you can get a lot of the same things, but I imagine that smoker's going to take some time to break in. You know, you're not going to have the gas station quality barbecue quite yet, but it's a fun, fun concept. I think they'll do really well.
Gas station quality barbecue should be your trademarked phrase.
Yeah, that's right.
And so moving on to coffee, because the Messenger Coffee, Ibis Bakery, that has been a real sensation.
It has, and it's only been, I mean, it has been open since last fall, but not since we last talked about New and Notable. And it was an old tire warehouse. And
downtown.
Downtown, Crossroads area. They've done a spectacular job with the renovation. It's just gorgeous.
What do you go there for?
I go for the coffee and the bread. So it's a Messenger Coffee and a collaboration with Ibis Bakery.
And this is a large space. This isn't a...
It's a really large space. They've got the bakery on the first floor where they actually make the breads, and they're the best breads in the city, I think.
They're grinding their own flour, which is really unusual.
Yeah. Do they have pastries, Mary?
Have pastries, croissant, the works. And they also have breakfast and lunch. You can get the bread as toast with avocado, egg. They do a pastrami open face.
Are they doing a pizza night like they used to do in Lenexa?
No, I'm hoping they do at some point.
Oh, yeah, they have to. Well, and you got to take your coffee and get up on that roof. They have a beautiful roof with a really unique view. So make sure you get a full fireplace, some seating area up there, too.
And that's on the third floor. But in between, on the second floor, above the bakery, is the roastery. So they actually are making the coffee there, which really smells good.
Jenny, what do you go there for?
You know, I have been for breakfast, so I have a hard time, not just getting a delicious cup of coffee, maybe a cappuccino, or you know, something like that, and then just like a croissant or just something lovely and crispy and crunchy. So the bread is great. You always have to take a loaf home. So yeah.
Let's talk about what is coming up on the horizon. First of all, Fox and Pearl.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that name is from or what it means exactly.
It's the middle names of
the owners,
Vaughn's girls.
Okay.
I want my middle name to be Fox.
Well, I do think Vaughn Good is a really talented chef. And I loved Hank Charcuterie, although I don't like driving to Lawrence for new restaurants, actually.
Well, we do have to kind of give a moment of silence to Hank's, because it really was and is, it made a phenomenal mark.
So let's explain this for our listeners. Hank's Charcuterie in Lawrence is closing, and a new concept is opening with the same
owner.
Yeah. So.
Although I'm hoping, you know,
and that the new place is opening on the west side,
mm-hmm. right? And
in Kansas City,
and we I hope Vaughn will consider the fried chicken at Hank's Charcuterie was so delicious.
He says the menu will be the same. He's not planning to revolutionize anything there. I mean, okay. He'll have a nice, good size U-shaped bar. He'll have a beautiful sidewalk patio, and then in the back there'll be an additional outdoor patio. The basement will be a private space with a bar that you can go to, but the food should remain pretty much the same. So
what will people go for those who didn't go to Hank's Charcuterie?
Well, he's known for doing breaking down whole animals. So you'll find game, you know, rabbit on his menu. He makes his own sausages in house, so you'll find lots of dishes like cassoulet that have sausages and different kinds of meat in it. So it's a very meat-heavy, meat-centric kind of place, but very rustic. And he promises the space will look like his food. Very
fun brunch.
Rustic. Yeah, he's going to have a great brunch there. So,
and then Novel is moving.
Yes. So Novel closes on March 24th on the west side. So if you are a lover of the house, go quickly and have your last meal there before they move to their shiny new space in the Crossroads, which will really be just such a pretty, pretty space. I've had the opportunity to have a walkthrough. But he's another one who's like, yeah, he might
when
be.
You say he.
Sorry, Ryan Brazil, the owner. He and his wife Jessica own Novel, obviously, and she's the pastry chef, and he's the savory side, and he's promising some changes. They're going to be adding some pasta and doing some new things. They're going to have a separate bar menu at this space and a much bigger bar. I mean, almost 20 seats
and a much bigger kitchen. They're going to have a lot more room to work with.
Can I say I had no nostalgia for that horrible building? I thought it was too small.
People are lamenting though,
like I know,
crying about it, and I'm like. Get over
it. You know, it was never built as really a house to live in. It was kind of a thrown together weird place. And
so when you talk about the old space, the space that has been Novel and was previously
Lil's,
it's a house on the west side, sort of a Victorian looking house that had clouds painted on the ceiling.
But it was never really an old house. It was kind of thrown together in some haphazard manner, but it had never been an old house.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but there are people who liked that sense about it.
Yes. You know, it's just kind of the warmth about it, I think, is what people will miss. But, you know, what will be fascinating is to see who goes into that space because Ryan Brazil put in a beautiful commercial kitchen to make that place really work for him. And so now it's going to be ready for the next fabulous thing to go in there.
What about Broadway Bistro?
Broadway Bistro is a kind of a relaunched concept. They were open for a period of time. They've now closed and they're getting ready to reopen, I believe, on March 15th. Chef Joe Shirley from Uberdine, if folks remember him,
he's
kind of
great.
A bit of a pop-up star, but he's certainly cooked for a long time in Kansas City and is a wonderful chef. He and Joe Donahue, which is his executive chef, he's kind of the F&B director, are opening up Broadway Bistro, and it's going to be kind of a comfort food lunch and dinner place.
Well, so there will be the complete list on our website, but as we go, James Beard Awards, I mean, that whittling down process is in progress, and some local chefs and restaurants have gotten nods. Real quick.
Yeah. So Ryan Mabee for Outstanding Bar Program.
Michael Corvino for Best Chef Midwest.
Right. Colby for Blue Stem, obviously, Outstanding Restaurant.
Megan Geralds for Outstanding Pastry Chef for Rye.
And Taylor Petrin for 1900 Baker for Best Baker. Outstanding Baker.
Very cool. Well, our time is up. Mary Block, Charles Ferruzza, Jenny Vergara, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jenny joins us from Feast Magazine. Mary blogs at Around the Block. And Charles is our longtime food critic here on KCUR. You can get the handy lists from today's recommendations at kcur.org and listen back to anything on this show at kcur.org/Central Standard. I also host a podcast called Midwesternish, and the first few episodes of season 2 just dropped this week. You can find those on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, anywhere they have podcasts. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. Linda Scher runs the board, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman, over and out.